Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks so much for being with us. Thank you, one and all, wherever you are, whenever you are, because we've got people in 90 countries listening whenever it works in their schedule, which is amazing and exciting. My guest tonight is an old friend. Guinevere Maria is somebody I knew 32 years ago when I was on Walkabout. And she approached me online and said, I'd love to be on your show. And I said, do you remember? And then we had a good laugh together. And she said, well, let's have a good time on your show. So we will be talking to her in a few minutes. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And I thought it would be interesting to create a context for how I met Guinevere Maria. But also, I allude to my Walkabout periodically, and a major theme of the show is the idea of Walkabout. But I haven't really told much of my Walkabout story. And that's an excellent segue to what we're going to talk about in the show. So long, long ago, in a place far, far away, I was a married guy teaching, and my mother died. And my father wasn't doing real well being alone, but a very old friend, someone from when he was a young adult, heard that mom had died, came out to check in with him, and they wound up, she helped him clean everything up. They got in a relationship. They went on a road trip cross country, and he wound up in California, which is where he always wanted to live. He really didn't want to be stuck in New York. So he was in California, and then he got a job working with kids, which he also always wanted to do. He was in a program where he was called a foster grandparent at a school for developmentally disabled kids, and he was having a wonderful time. And then a couple of years later, he had a brain tumor, and I rushed out there. And the year before, through a series of serendipitous, strange circumstances, I had learned a method of hands-on healing called therapeutic touch. And it was a totally odd set of circumstances. I stumbled into a room where the training was going on and discovered not only was it interesting, but that I could do it easily. And the people who were the core teachers of that were connected to a mystery school that goes back a very long way. They're connected to the tradition of Madame Blavatsky. So when I went out to take care of Dad as he went in for brain surgery, I came at that point as someone who had some experience with healing, and I worked on him, and I also charged up all the IV fluids and swore the nurses to using the ones that I had charged up. And Dad came out of the hospital in 10 days. Able to go home with support services, obviously, but he went home in 10 days. And I sat there scratching my head going, oh, that's interesting. I have no idea how much of this was what I did, but, and he's an amazing guy, but still. So he did really well. He was totally fine. And I realized later that both of his brain tumors had to do with emotional events from his past that he hadn't let go of. And I had read articles about how that can happen. But about a year later, there was a similar incident. I called him on his birthday and he didn't recognize who I was. And I called friends and they got an ambulance to come and take him to the hospital. I thought maybe he had a stroke, but it was a second brain tumor. And I rushed out. I was in the middle of a divorce at that point. I rushed out to do what I needed to do. And people whisked me away from the airport to his hospital bed. And I had this very intense conversation with my dad, sorting out some of the emotional stuff that was still coming up while he was in the hospital. And his boss took me out in the hall and said, do you know anything about psychic surgery? Now, even in my life, maybe not so much now, but certainly then, that was a non sequitur. That was totally out of nowhere. But my response was, oh, it's going to be one of those days. No, but I guess I'm going to find out. So he knew a man who was a healer that had success with various kinds of cancers and had been trained in the Philippines by psychic surgeons. And he thought it might be what would turn things around for my dad, whom everybody loved. So we went to see Greg Shelkin, and there's a very long story about the adventure I went through with Dad, meeting lots of different healers and doing lots of different things. But it eventually became clear that Dad was done. He did not want to do the medical model. He did not want to be worked on by healers, and he was ready to leave. And I helped him with that. I made all the preparations so he could relax and leave whenever he was ready. But it became clear that there was a special connection with Greg, and I went back to see him after Dad died, and it became clear that I was supposed to apprentice with him. The other person who showed up also in a strange little conversation, oh, you work with crystals? You should meet this Cherokee medicine man. They call him the Crystal Grandfather. His name is Kitoa. And so I met Kitoa, and Kitoa wound up kind of scooping me up in the middle of all this and showing up at odd times and making sure I wasn't alone while Dad was dying. And just being a good friend to me, which is not the usual protege and medicine man kind of thing. He was there for me. And when I was leaving to go back to the East Coast, he was the last person I went to, and the conversation went something like, so you're leaving? Yeah. You know, coming back? Yeah, I think so. You know when? I said, well, if this conversation goes like every other conversation we've had, you're about to tell me. I said, yeah, pick me up on this date at this time. So I went back to the East Coast, did whatever cleanup I could of my job and the other stuff with family, depending on who you talk to. I did a good or bad job. Depends who tells the story. Bought a new truck, put 150% overload in it, and drove cross country in 4 days, dumped my stuff in a little shack that I had rented, and went to pick up Kitoa, who plopped me in the middle of a reservation and a major week-long ceremony. And that was the beginning of Walkabout. That was the beginning of my apprenticeship. And both the traditions were different. The methods I was learning were different, although the awareness that I was being brought into was the same. And both teachers basically taught the same way, which was throw you in the deep end of the pool and watch to make sure that you weren't drowning. And, you know, he's doing good, flailing around a little bit. Yeah, that's okay. And you couldn't ask questions about it, because if you asked questions, you were going up into your head, and it was about having the experience and integrating that the experience was real and that you actually could take action in that experience and do what needed to be done. So in the middle of all this, I needed a job. So I wound up working in a locked psych hospital at night, where I could see who the people that had voices were talking to. That was interesting. And I also wanted to have some kind of community that felt a little bit a little less out there and crazy. So I did a couple of things. And one of them was I went to the Spiritual Healing Center in Marin County, which had a very interesting spiritually oriented approach and also had a ministry program. And I thought, yeah, having the Reverend moniker might be useful along the way. Give me a credential. And the people were wonderful. And the woman who started that is our guest tonight. Guinevere Maria. So that's tonight's metaphysical musing, which is all a tee up to a segue to introducing my old friend, my old dear friend, Guinevere Maria. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, it's my pleasure, David. It's really wonderful to hear your story because I didn't know all that.
Right. I was just one of the folks that was there and doing stuff, and I was bartering for repairs around the center and other things. So, you know, we never really had that conversation. But, yeah, there was a lot going on in my life.
Well, you know, it's so wonderful to hear you say all that because those days were so magical.
Yeah.
There was, and it's hard to describe it because it's not necessarily happening in the same way it was then. I think we were being really awakened to something that was so profound. And little did we know it was going to take the next 30 years to integrate it.
Right.
Right. We didn't know that then. But we
And it was so perfect that you noticed me on Facebook and knew about
it was your birthday.
Is that what it was?
That's right. It was your birthday.
And you knew about the show, and you said, boy, I would love to be on your show. And I said, yeah. Do you remember all those years ago that we didn't cross paths and did all this together? You were like, oh, my goodness.
Well, it's really wonderful because I have been doing this work for so long, almost 40 years now. And when I meet people that journeyed with me, especially in those days, the stories are phenomenal. There's such deep, profound healings and spontaneous healings that would happen.
Yes.
And it happens now, but there was something so magical, like I said, about it. And so when I hear your story, it reminds me and it really touches my heart to the joy that I've had in being able to be with so many people. From all over the world. And
amazing, I know the amazing stuff you were doing then. I'm looking forward to hearing about what's gone on since. But what I always ask my guests is, how did you wind up doing this? Where did this start? And what was your journey and your walkabout that brought you here?
Okay. Well, you know, we talk about having a calling, and we all do. But I was one of those people that never forgot my calling. And so I think we're all born with some knowledge of who we are and what we're here to do, even though we may not have the words for it, but there's a feeling to it. And if we're guided and we're held and we're protected in that calling, we begin to develop it. And my grandmother is Cherokee, so I was one of those people that I was very psychic as a child, which I think most children are, very intuitive. Mm-hmm. I was very empathic. And my grandmother helped me integrate that. She helped me understand it. She helped me stay awake to it. And through her own way, she would teach me. And so I started when I was 3.
Wow.
And a lot of what she taught me was how to pay attention, how mm-hmm. to listen. And I thought it was a game, which it was in a way, but what she was really teaching me was, what is it that I see? And can I look from a different place inside of me? Can I trust what I see? And through that, she taught me how to really hold things sacred. So that became the real foundation for me. And I just thought, you know, when you're raised with a certain way, that's my normal. And even though I saw other people, you know, it didn't really matter that my mother or father didn't really get it.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't matter because it was already part of me. And so to me, what was my deepest healing was that spirit was very real to me. At night, as a child, spirit would come to me. I would see it as in a child's way. I would see it as angels or light or even Christ. But every night, these beings would come to me at night. And I just assumed that happened to everybody.
Right.
And it was so beautiful, and I knew I was loved. And it was feeding my soul, but it was also feeding my cellular body, because I didn't know that as a child. I know it now as I look back. But it was giving me this sense of I'm loved, I belong, and I'm protected. And then the opposite side of that was that my brother, also being Cherokee, had many animals, and this was also my normal. We had 64. At one point, I counted them, but we had animals. We had animals my whole life, but I counted them at one point, and there's 64 animals all at the same time, and they were wild animals. We had a wolf, a coyote, a bobcat, a couple red-tailed foxes, which I'll tell you about in a minute. I mean, when we talk a little more. But these animals, they were my dear friends. I mean, how do I describe, and anyone that's ever had an animal will know what I'm talking about. The love is so profound that there's no judgment. There's just this deep knowing of who you are. And I felt so safe with these animals, even though they were wild, and they'd let you know if you crossed the boundary or if you became fearful, they could bite you. Mm-hmm. So I was being taught to stay present with them, really present with them, and be with them. And they could then really be with me. And what they taught me was never be something you're not. The wolf didn't try to be the coyote. They were who they were. And they taught me, and this is more of an internal teaching because I certainly didn't have the words for it at that age, right. But the sense that I can trust nature. I can trust the primal energy because it's authentic and real. And I can trust spirit because it's no fear. It's just pure love. Mm-hmm. What I had trouble with was people. And people around me, they thought I was really shy because I wouldn't look at them. And I realized later it was so painful to look at people because they wouldn't tell me the truth.
Right.
And I didn't understand. I would see them. I would know what they're really thinking. And I'd know what they wanted to say, but they didn't say it. So I got really confused. So I wouldn't look at them because it was too painful until later on in life and I began understanding. And so my first teaching was stay awake and stay present. My second teaching was my grandmother, or the same grandmother that I was telling you about. She used to tell me, I will come back. And this is where your story ties in. She used to say, I will come back when I die, so you will know there's no death. And I like, okay, whatever, you know. And when she died, I was 21, and I kept saying no to my calling. I went and got my degrees in psychology, and I felt like I really needed to be grounded in this world, and I kept saying, not ready for the gifts yet, because the responsibility of these gifts was too big for me. So I kept saying no, and Spirit would ask and say no. In fact, I'd be screaming no. I wasn't that calm. But when my grandmother died, I was 21, and I went to her casket, and there's all these people around, of course. And I was crying, and all of a sudden, she appeared right next to me. I mean, as clearly as you can see anyone. And she said, so crystal clear to me. You can say I heard it inside. Doesn't matter. She said, I told you I would come back. And I want you to know that I am so happy. So please don't cry for me. I'm right where I want to be. Those were her exact words. And what surprised me is not that I saw her. That didn't surprise me. What surprised me is no one else did.
Right.
And I realized then this is the deepest suffering of humanity, is that we don't really see. We don't really see that there's no death. We don't really see that there's no disconnect. That we're all right here. And that's when I said yes to my calling. Because I knew then that what I'm here to do is hold life sacred and help people understand there's no death. And so then, you know, just a few more moments in that the next level was then meeting my first teacher. She was an Alaskan shaman. You may have even met her, Doris Williams. because she was with us during that time. And she was one of those people, again, so amazing, you know, like the story you're telling. Amazing things were happening. I mean, she would do the same thing. She would appear. She lived in Alaska, and I lived in California. And every once in a while, we would meet each other. She would come to California, I would go to Alaska, or we'd meet in Europe. But most of her training was that she would come to me at night, she'd sit on my bed, she would wake me up,
mm-hmm.
and she would say, tell me something. And then she would call me from Alaska the next day and say, okay, what did I tell you last night? And so her teaching was the same as my grandmother was, pay attention and stay awake.
Right.
Because there's so much happening on so many realms that you must know so that you can protect yourself, but also that you can learn and open. So that was her gift. But she was a shapeshifter, and she was an astral traveler. I mean, the real astral traveler. She didn't just think it. She literally was there. And she lived in Alaska. I mean, she did live in Alaska. But she would travel when people would crash their planes and they're in the snow. She would astral travel to them and lay on their bodies to keep them warm and then literally physically get in a plane and go see them, go find them.
Wow.
Or tell other people to go find them. By the time people found them, that body was, the people were still alive and they were warm.
Right.
So this is, she brought that realm into the physical, which is a very difficult thing to do. But what she taught me was the same as these animals, the same as spirit, the same as my grandmother, was that, yes, she had these amazing gifts, but she was the most ordinary person I ever knew.
Mm-hmm.
And she would not allow anyone to put her on a pedestal. She would do the same thing that your Cherokee teacher would do, throw you in the deep end, you know, and watch you swim, but would not allow you to make her into something that she's not, or put mm-hmm. her on a pedestal so you couldn't reach her. It was the teaching, those were the most important teachings. Despite all of her gifts, she taught me that to be who you are. And don't let anyone put you above you. And don't put anyone below you. That we're all equals and we're all on this path together. It was the teaching. And then the next teacher I had was Greg Shulkin. So there's how we tie in together, because
right.
we started doing work at the Westerbeck Ranch. And then I met Don Westerbeck, and he was a prominent businessman, and he got a brain tumor. And because of Craig, because Greg was living there at the same time, and so he thought, Don Westerbeck thought, why don't I go to the Philippines and just see what they can do, because, you know, I don't have much time to live. So he brought a whole crew with him. He brought a nurse and a film crew, and he went to the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
He removed the tumor out of his brain, and he came back, and he brought it with him. And in those days, there was no DNA testing.
Right.
It was so wonderful, because they said, well, this is your blood type, but we don't know if this is your tissue. But there's no more brain tumor. It was gone. So when I saw the film, right, I said, that's where I want to be. I wanted to be with people that proved the existence of God, that proved the existence of love on a daily basis.
Yeah.
This wasn't about sensationalism. This wasn't about, you know, proving something, or it was about these ordinary people having extraordinary gifts and holding it with such integrity and such truth, because they knew it was God doing it and they were just the instrument. And so that's what we did. My husband and I went there, and we lived there for 7 months. And the beauty of that was we went to all these different healers, and I almost left, because I thought, no, I only came here for the light. I'm not going to work with any fear of darkness. And the last person we went to see was
I hate interrupting your story, but we have to go to a break.
That's fine.
So we will be back shortly unless we get taller. My guest tonight is Guinevere Maria of the Spiritual Healing Center in Marin, California. Center. And what's the website?
It's spiritualhealinginc.org.
Fantastic.
Center for Spiritual Healing.
Okay, we will be back in just a moment on the Farkas Files on Empower Radio.
Many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home. I'm home. And I love it. I'm home. I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home. I'm home. Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg.
Ha-ha, I win. Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well!
I'm wet!
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound health and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it?
Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Guinevere Maria from the Center for Spiritual Healing in Marin County, California, who is my old dear friend, who I am very happy to reconnect with. And this is so much fun because I heard bits and pieces of those stories without the full context, not knowing how you were involved, knowing that Greg was involved. But, you know, and I'll try not to ask the questions like, so when was this? And, you know, the chronology doesn't matter that much.
It was a long time
but
ago.
it's It's fascinating how we wound up connected to the same folks, learning the same kinds of things. I'm sure it was very different going to the Philippines and learning directly from the healers there, but what I learned from Greg was extraordinary.
Well, Greg is an amazing, that's how he healed, actually. He was 14 and his mother took him there because they couldn't figure out what was going on with his headaches. So it was all his intuitive awareness, I think, that was able to then be released through what they did with him, the psychic work. So being in the Philippines was, the reason I went was I was very young and people would say, what are you doing? And I would say, I'm a healer. And they would say, well, what are you going to do when you grow up? People didn't understand. They didn't. I mean, there was no language for what we were doing. Mm-hmm. People didn't even understand spiritual healing, and so I needed to be with. I had Doris that saw me, but I needed to be with people that really saw me, and that could help me integrate what I already knew. And when I saw Paz, she didn't. You know, there was no way she could have known I was coming. She was the last person I was going to see before I thought I'm leaving. I go to her door, and in broken English, she looks at me and she says, they told me you were coming. And she took my hand, and she took me upstairs in this sort of barren room with a little stool beside a bed, and her mother was in the bed. And she said, my mother is dying. They told me you were coming. Here's Paz Navolta, was the most profound healer of the Philippines, very well-known healer. But what she did, I couldn't heal this woman. But what she did in that moment was, I see you, I know who you are, and I trust you.
Right.
She put me on this little stool and walked out of the room. And that, in that moment, said to me, this woman knows how to help me integrate what I know and who I am, and she sees me. And she was such a healer for me because she nurtured me into myself. And then, after 7 months of doing all the work and working with this spiritist healers and also the psychic surgeons, you know, the ones that stick their hands in and pull stuff out. She then said, go home and create a sister church and I will support you, you know, just energetically. We will hold this with you. And so that's what we did. And that's how the Center for Spiritual Healing came about, was through their blessing. So we came home and we started doing services. And it was very humble. We just started, had, you know, a little room off our, a little cottage off our house. And so we started there, and then we outgrew that. But that's how it started. The center was based on exactly that, to support people to become who they are. Everybody already has their own gifts. There's something so profoundly deep within every one of us. And if we are seen and held and protected, that will emerge. If we wanted to, and we will begin to remember who we are. And that's what the center's based on. What she gave me is what then I came back to give others. And that's what I've been doing for the last 40 years.
And, you know, my memory of it was how special everything always felt. And how all these people that didn't know each other anywhere else came and immediately knew that somehow we were all connected and it was an important thing that we were doing.
Well, thank you for saying that. It's true. There was something so profound. Maybe, you know, 20 to 200 people every Sunday, and there would always be a collective message. And so I would never know what I was going to talk about, because even when I thought I knew what I was going to talk about, by the time I took two steps into the center of the room, it was gone. So I was forced to listen to the collective, which was my great teaching. Because when I sat, when I stood there in silence and listened, then I spoke directly to the people and to their souls, and that's where the healing came. Mm-hmm. It wasn't me doing anything. I was just listening. I was just listening. The same thing my grandmother taught me when I was 3 years old. Listen.
Right.
Pay attention. What's really happening here? Well, the same thing the animals taught me. Listen. Pay attention. And so that's really all of our work. You know, and how to know what we're listening to so that we're safe, and how to discern. And so that's a lot of my work. It's interesting because I was taking a walk. I wanted to say this today. I was taking a walk today, and I was talking to you, David, by myself, right? And I'm saying to you, he's probably going to ask me, what do I call myself, right? And I've really never known what to call myself. It's been the hardest part of my work. I'm sure you go through the same thing. And I call myself a spiritual healer, spiritual teacher, the Center for Spiritual Healing. It's all about, you know, healing. But the truth is, we're already whole, so there really isn't anything to heal. So that's what I teach my students, that what we do as healers or people that support you is that we hold the space so that you can find that you're already whole, so that you can, you know, be held and nurtured and supported so that you can return to what is already yours and your own wholeness. And so I'm saying to myself, okay, so I'm not really a healer because people heal themselves. You know, they have their own source. I mean, I can witness who they are and I can support them, but they heal themselves. So I know that, right? So then I said, okay, so what do I call myself? And I already know this, but I was like talking to myself. I thought, you know, who I really am is I'm a medium. And people call me a medium. But when I really said it, the moment I said I'm a medium, literally, not kidding, a red-tailed hawk came and landed on this post right in front of me. I'm not kidding. And that's my medicine. That's my Cherokee medicine.
And no doubt cocked his head to one side and looked you in the eye.
Exactly. I'm not kidding. And I'm going, okay, so I'm a medium. Is that what you're telling me? And he just sat there and looked at me. And I had all these chills going through me, going, thank you very much. I get it. And then it flew away because it knew I got the message. So this is what I want to say, is that, I'm a real medium. If you come to me and you want me to talk to someone that's passed on, if they say yes, then of course I can bring their message to you and help you hear them. But the real medium that I am is that I help you hear your own soul. Mm. I help you return to what is real and true within you. And that was what was taught to me in the Philippines. That was taught to me from Doris and from my grandmother, is that the medium is one that acts as the in-between.
Right.
If you can't hear, I will help you hear what your soul is telling you. That's the true medium. I will help you hear the message of your ancestors. I will help you listen to that deep voice inside of yourself. And so I wanted to say that because I've never really put it together in that way, and it feels so real to me to say, I'm not doing anything. I'm just bringing the message, bringing it into focus so that you can receive what is already yours. And I always say that part, but something about the red-tailed hawk coming and saying yes. And that's the
piece. There's a quality in the way you're describing it and the way it feels to me that, yes, you're doing everything you're describing, but you're also doing a soul retrieval.
Oh, yeah. But there's something I want to say about soul retrieving, and I know that that's a big deal, especially in those days. But there isn't anything to retrieve. You're already whole. Your soul is already completely perfect. It's we're the ones that have been disconnected from it. So often people think I have to go get my soul, something to do with something's lost. Your soul is not lost. We may have forgotten to connect, or maybe never were taught how to connect. But it's a shift in that the wording of you're already whole. Your soul is so beautiful. You're ancient. How to return to that so that you can begin to feel the power and the beauty and the essence of your own soul. So then you go, yeah, that's who I am. Because that's the real work. My work and the book that I've written is about how to return to the, I call it the frequency of your soul. It's like right. A perfect note. Each of us have our own perfect signature that belongs to me. It's mine. And that signature, that note, that frequency heals me. Nothing outside of me healing it. Now, people around me can harmonize. If they're in their frequency, they can help me open to my frequency. But my work is opening to that true and pure frequency of my soul so then I can bring it into real time and into a tangible reality in my body so that my body can begin to heal physically, emotionally, and all that. Which I'm sure you know that. But that it is the soul retrieval, but just so your listeners know that you're already whole, and I see that so clearly when I sit with people, no matter how tormented they feel, no matter how terrible they are, no matter even if they're under attack and there's another energy that's entered them, it's still not who they are. Mm-hmm. Who they are is the pureness of their own soul, and my work and their work is to return to that, no matter what's going on. Yeah. And that's how they heal.
Yep. Well, it's the difference between a medium and, in some ways, a shaman, who's more of Mr. Fix-It.
That's right. I'm glad you said that. I'm really glad you said that.
I always say my work is fixing and cleaning.
And that is like, the shaman's work.
Mm-hmm. Like the special folks that come in after a fire that know how to clean it up so it looks like nothing ever happened.
Wow.
You know, that's
wow. Well, that's a beautiful gift, David. That's a beautiful gift because it is the path of the shaman. And we're shifting. This is how I describe it. I was taught as a shaman to take on people's pain, to take on their illness. I mean, physically, I would take on people's illness.
That's a hard way to work.
It would go through this very sensitive, small body. It was a very hard path for me.
Yeah. That's a very difficult way to work.
Yeah, exactly. And those people out there that are empaths, they often do that, and they don't even know what to do with all that energy they've taken on. And so that's what happened to me. But then, we're shifting. I think as a culture and as a healing culture, we're shifting from the model of taking on other people's pain to standing in the light so clearly that others will find their own source.
Mm-hmm.
And their pain will burn within that source. It will transform so that it's not no one else has to do it for you. So there's this shift in that. But there's still people like you that are shamans that are doing it, which is actually really pretty profound if you're in agreement to doing that work, because sometimes people really need it. They really need someone to come and help them clean it up and move it because they can't quite do it themselves yet.
Right, right. Especially if there's been a lot of trauma or trauma in the family going back through the lineage,
yes.
Which has made it, they're the latest increment of that larger trauma that's now happened again in them.
Yeah, I'm glad. Yeah.
And it's so prevalent. It's amazing to me how many people are abused.
It I mean, that's another whole interview we can have or show we can have, because how do we stop it? And part of my work, a big part of my work, is going through the chakras, and that's it's different from most paths. But the first chakra is the ancestors and what we carry in our bones. And we do carry the imprint of their pain and their suffering. And our work, I believe our work is, I say it literally, imagine your ancestors from seven generations are standing in front of you. And what if you said, I feel your pain. I know your pain. I carry your pain. It's in my body. But it must stop here. I will not pass that pain on to my children or my children's children. So it's my work now to recognize the pain so I validate my ancestors. I know, yes, I know you suffered. I feel it. I validate you. But I'm here now, which they long to give me, is their gift. What they long to pass on, not their pain. I feel it. I know it. But what they're trying to get my attention, and once they've got my attention, they can now give me their gifts. And that's what happened to me with my ancestors. When I finally did this work and felt their pain, they gave me their gifts. And it's not something that you get in your head. It's something you get in your bones. Mm-hmm. And when you receive the gifts of your ancestors, I believe our soul chose this lineage for those gifts. And when I actually receive those gifts, it becomes my unshakable foundation. It's who I am. It's what my soul can align with. And my ancestors gave to me the knowledge how to protect what is sacred. And it's not something that I think about. It's like a mother holding her newborn child. It's someone tries to take her child. It's an instinct. It would not allow anyone to hurt what is sacred, and that's what's inside of me. I will not allow anyone to hurt what is sacred, and that came from my ancestors. And so when I received it, I go, "Oh yeah, of course."
Mm-hmm.
And every time I'm there, they're with me. Their pain's gone. I'm not carrying their pain anymore.
Right.
But I certainly carry their gifts. And so I believe that's our work, and that's part of my work, and in my programs, that's where we start. So I know our foundation. If I know my ancestors' gifts, then I know what I'm here to do, and I know who's supporting me. And so then it goes from that to the next chakra. But I love that you said that, because once I know that, then I can access that at any point, because it's in me. It moves through me.
Right. Yeah, my work is more about the trauma in this lifetime will throw people, well, they'll go out of their body as the only way that a child can survive. When they're being terrorized. And the first and second chakra winds up chronically closed.
Yes.
And they can't access all that.
No,
Then there's the aura damage and the opportunistic parasitic entities that go, oh, look, nobody's home.
Right.
What's that?
That's right.
So that's a lot of the cleanup I do when I work on people. And probably 30 to 50% of the people that I take a look at have that pattern from some kind of childhood abuse.
And that
almost always is connected to a lineage issue where there was trauma going back many, many generations.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
No, I know that the path that we're talking about is very similar. I see that too. And that's why I've been doing these programs and teaching people, because once I know in my bones, in my first chakra, what I'm connected to, what is real, what is authentic, then I can discern. I'll know the difference when there's an entity trying to come in. I'll know the difference when someone's trying to hurt me. I'll know if it's real time. I'll know if I'm in danger or if it's a cellular memory. I'll know that. So that's where that comes from. And then in the second chakra, I teach people, it's the the feminine energy, but it's the primal energy.
Right.
It's what the animals taught me. How do I say no and stop apologizing for my very existence? How
right.
do I access my true self without being afraid? Because usually we're powerful, and the people that raised us are afraid of our power. So we become afraid of our own power, and we don't access it.
Right.
So then that's what you see. You see those people that haven't accessed it, and they leave their body because they're afraid of their power. My work is to help them return to it.
Right.
And then go into it. It is the shamanic journey, but every culture has it. How to return, how to go into the underworld, into the depths of our being, and reclaim what has been lost. Take it back. Have I lost my innocence, my truth, my ability to speak, to go and claim it? And that's the real work in my groups. That's what we do. We reach deep within ourselves and say, I am with the mother. I am with the creator. I'm with the earth. I'm with the divine, whatever you call the feminine. And I take her with me, you know, the cougar. You know, the jaguar, I take her with me into the underworld, and she helps me reclaim what is mine. When I know who I am and I'm standing in my truth and I reclaim what has been lost or taken from me, then the third chakra, then I can begin to show up. I can begin to come into my light.
Right.
Because you're right. The first three chakras, the first two, if we don't have those, we can't ever show up. We cannot be in our light. It's too scary.
So much of what's done intentionally in this culture to both distract people and keep them afraid is basically about suppressing the first and second chakras so people have no power.
Well, and that's what I teach. I'm glad you said that because I teach that all the time. It's our culture that we're raised, especially women, we're raised to be afraid of our power, to not speak our truth, to not show up. And unfortunately, I still see that happening. Even with as much knowledge as we have, I still see that happening with little girls,
right.
little boys.
Right.
They don't like their bodies, or they're afraid, or they're not able to speak their truth. They're not able to say, ouch. Why?
So we're catching up after 32 years, and I only have so much time on the show, and we're running out of time.
I know. It's amazing. Amazing.
It just goes so quickly. As the saying goes, we really must do this again sometime soon.
Yes, I think so.
My guest tonight is Guinevere Maria, healer, shaman, medium, and founder of the Center for Spiritual Healing in Marin County, California. And an old wonderful friend. Thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Oh, David, it's been wonderful. Thank you so much.
And if you can stay on the line after we go off the air, we can chat for a few minutes.
Sure, I'd like that. Thank
Fantastic.
You very much.
If you've gotten curious about this odd guy, David, and what he does, you can go to househealing.com. And cleverly hiding in plain view on the contact tab is every conceivable way to get in touch with me, including a scheduling link that will allow us to talk on the phone, find a time to talk. I do a free assessment of what's going on with a person, place, situation, and we can see how my work might be helpful to you. If you want to know more about the show or access the four and a half years now of shows, hundreds and hundreds of wonderful interviews with amazing people, go to thefarkasfiles.com. You can also find Empower Radio and the show on Stitcher and TuneIn and iTunes podcasts, and we're all over the place. And I just want to mention, you know, Empower Radio is a platform that provides positive, fascinating messages 24/7. If you're enjoying my show, which is on at 9 p.m. every day with the new live show recorded on Thursdays, or any of the other shows that are on all day, please support us. Right now, we're trying to go to the next level, replace all the equipment in the studio, do some other things so that we can provide what we've always provided, but do it better. And to do that, we have an Indiegogo crowdfunding program going on. Please go to empowerradio.com, click on the Indiegogo logo, and just give us whatever you can to help support us in doing the things that need to get done at this point in the growth of Empower Radio. We appreciate your support, and we hope that you can give us some little bit to support us in giving you something that's good for you and your life. So wherever you are, whatever time it is out there, when you're listening to this, I hope you're having a fantastic time. And we will see you next week. This is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.